5. She had herself designed the costume for him, which he wore for the rest of his life. It was elegant and characteristic, a long black frock coat, buttoned almost to the top, but stylishly cut, a soft hat, in summer a straw hat with a wide brim, a white batiste cravat with a full bow and hanging ends, a cane with a silver knob. His hair flowed onto his shoulders. It was dark brown, and only lately had begun to get a little grey. He was clean-shaven. He was said to have been very handsome in his youth, and, to my mind, he was still an exceptionally impressive figure even in old age. Besides, who can talk of old age at 53? From his special pose as a patriot, however, he did not try to appear younger, but seemed rather to pride himself on the solidity of his age, and, dressed as described, tall and thin with flowing hair, he looked almost like a patriarch, or even more like the portrait of the poet Kukolnik, engraved in the edition of his works published in 1830 or thereabouts. This resemblance was especially striking when he sat in the garden in summertime, on a seat under a bush of flowering lilac, with both hands propped on his cane and an open book beside him, musing poetically over the setting sun. In regard to books, I may remark that he came in later years rather to avoid reading, but that was only quite towards the end. The papers and magazines ordered in great profusion by Varvara Petrovna he was continually reading. He never lost interest in the successes of Russian literature either, though he always maintained a dignified attitude with regard to them. He was at one time engrossed in the study of our home and foreign politics, but he soon gave up the undertaking with a gesture of despair. It sometimes happened that he would take de Tocqueville with him into the garden while he had a Paul de Kock in his pocket, but these are trivial matters. I must observe in parenthesis about the portrait of Kukolnik. The engraving had first come into the hands of Varvara Petrovna when she was a girl in a high-class boarding school in Moscow. She fell in love with the portrait at once, after the habit of all girls at school, who fall in love with anything they come across, as well as with their teachers, especially the drawing and writing masters. What is interesting in this, though, is not the characteristics of girls, but the fact that even at 50, Varvara Petrovna kept the engraving among her most intimate and treasured possessions, so that perhaps it was only on this account that she had designed for Stepan Trofimovitch a costume somewhat like the poet's in the engraving. But that, of course, is a trifling matter too. For the first years, or more accurately, for the first half of the time he spent with Varvara Petrovna, Stepan Trofimovitch was still planning a book, and every day seriously prepared to write it. But during the later period, he must have forgotten even what he had done. More and more frequently he used to say to us, "I seem to be ready for work. My materials are collected, yet the work doesn't get done. Nothing is done." And he would bow his head dejectedly. No doubt this was calculated to increase his prestige in our eyes as a martyr to science, but he himself was longing for something else. "They have forgotten me. I'm no use to anyone," broke from him more than once. This intensified depression took special hold of him towards the end of the 50s. Varvara Petrovna realized at last that it was a serious matter. Besides, she could not endure the idea that her friend was forgotten and useless. To distract him and at the same time to renew his fame, she carried him off to Moscow, where she had fashionable acquaintances in the literary and scientific world. But it appeared that Moscow, too, was unsatisfactory. It was a peculiar time. Something new was beginning, quite unlike the stagnation of the past. Something very strange, too, though it was felt everywhere, even at Skvoreshniki. Rumours of all sorts reached us. The facts were generally more or less well known, but it was evident that, in addition to the facts, there were certain ideas accompanying them, and, what's more, a great number of them. And this was perplexing. It was impossible to estimate and find out exactly what was the drift of these ideas. Varvara Petrovna was prompted by the feminine composition of her character to a compelling desire to penetrate the secret of them. She took to reading newspapers and magazines, prohibited publications printed abroad, and even the revolutionary manifestos, which were just beginning to appear at the time. She was able to procure them all. But this only set her head in a whirl. She fell to writing letters. She got few answers, and they grew more incomprehensible as time went on. Stepan Trofimovitch was solemnly called upon to explain these ideas to her once and for all, but she remained distinctly dissatisfied with his explanations. Stepan Trofimovitch's view of the general movement was supercilious in the extreme. In his eyes, all it amounted to was that he was forgotten and of no use. At last, his name was mentioned, at first in periodicals published abroad as that of an exiled martyr, and immediately afterwards in Petersburg as that of a former star in a celebrated constellation. He was even for some reason compared with Radishev. Then someone printed the statement that he was dead and promised an obituary notice of him. Stepan Trofimovitch instantly perked up and assumed an air of immense dignity. All his disdain for his contemporaries evaporated, and he began to cherish the dream of joining the movement and showing his powers. Varvara Petrovna's faith in everything instantly revived, and she was thrown into a violent ferment. It was decided to go to Petersburg without a moment's delay, to find out everything on the spot, to go into everything personally, and, if possible, to throw themselves heart and soul into the new movement. Among other things, she announced that she was prepared to found a magazine of her own, and henceforward to devote her whole life to it. Seeing what it had come to, Stepan Trofimovitch became more condescending than ever, and on the journey began to behave almost patronizingly to Varvara Petrovna, which she at once laid up in her heart against him. She had, however, another very important reason for the trip, which was to renew her connections in higher spheres. It was necessary, as far as she could, to remind the world of her existence, or at any rate, to make an attempt to do so. The ostensible object of the journey was to see her only son, who was just finishing his studies at a Petersburg lyceum.